ईश्वराय विद्महे सत्यदेवाय धीमहि तन्नः सर्वः प्रचोदयात्। शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः।
Loving Sai Ram to everyone and a warm welcome to each one of you, dear brothers and sisters, to this panel discussion from the studios of Sri Satya Sai Media Center. I am Bishu and along with me is Prem, again from the Media Center, as well as brothers Amay and Sai Giridhar from the Sri Satya Sai Center for Human Values. The month of April is a month of reflection, introspection, inner awakening. Every Aradhana day, your mind goes back to the events that led to April 24th and the 3 days after that, those harrowing 3 days when you could not do anything, you could not eat, you could not sleep, you could not think. You could only pray, pray, pray and weep and wait for a miracle to happen. And every time Aradhana Day comes, that deep-seated sorrow surfaces, that sorrow of missing Bhagwan, and that sorrow takes the form of tears. Tears streaming down your cheeks. These are tears of pain, tears of separation, tears of feeling like an orphan. And at the same time, these are tears of gratitude, tears of penitence, tears asking forgiveness, as well as tears expressing your undying love for Bhagwan. And so every Aradhana Day has been a very, very poignant moment for each one of us, isn't it, dear brothers?
Absolutely. In fact, the month of April itself, the way Bhagwan chose this month of April, it would typically be after Shivaratri that Bhagwan would leave to Vrindavan. And it was almost like the spirit and the soul of Prashanti itself left. And added to that, the dry summer of Rayalaseema, we would leave the hearts even drier. And it was a journey that Swami took us through the years and even through the months leading up to April, when the number of darshans reduced. And every time, otherwise the eyes would wait to see that orange form would now be closed. And we would only see the chair coming out and the aarti being taken. But many times when I reflect on this month of April, I wonder why Swami chose this. And one of the things that comes to my mind is that this was the time in April that all the students and most of the residents of Prashanti would leave back to their hometowns. Yes. Primarily because Swami was not here. Swami would be either in Kodaikanal or Swami would be in Vrindavan. And so he chose this particular time, I think, in my humble little opinion, to probably cause as less harm or pain to us. Because I think even in his leaving his body, he did not want to cause pain to anyone. Yes. So he chose a time. All the other months of the year have some festival or the other, except this one month of April. Probably Ugadi sometimes, it falls either in first week of April or in the last week of March. So I think even this month of April was chosen in such a way that he could cause the least amount of pain to us.
When I reflect about the Aradhana Mahotsavam, pain is something that we cannot, it's an emotion which we cannot put aside when we're talking about this month. I'm reminded of, the classic Vedantic analogy of seeing a snake where there's a rope. And Swami would explain that, see, if it was completely dark, there's no fear because you don't see anything. If it's completely bright, you know what is there, so there is no fear again. But the problem comes in twilight, when there is little light and when there is little darkness. When we look at Swami, we have the enlightenment that here is a personality which is beyond the body, which is divine. But we also are in the darkness of being attached to that form. So I think it is that duality, that twilight of wisdom is what is causing the pain. Then what does it matter? You know, I again reminded of a very beautiful padyam or a Sanskrit shloka that Swami would quote. I think most of you must be familiar, where Swami says, Ya chinta dhana dhanya. You know, Swami says, you cry for your family, you cry for your wife, you cry for your child. If you cry little for God, you know, the dwara of Yama will open and you can walk in royally. Swami says, what does it matter? I mean, even if out of illusion, if you're crying for Swami, I think that tears and that pain is not going to go in.
Yes. Having said that, Brother Prem, the analogy of snake and rope as it goes, the conclusion of the story is a wise man walks with a lamp to throw some light on, you know, what is apparently a snake there. But in the presence of that light, one discovers that it is not a snake, but it is just a rope.
Yes.
And having seen the rope, one cannot see a snake again or assume a snake again. And Bhagawan is that light in our life.
Yes.
In the twilight of confusion,
yes,
in our life, He is that light that has come, yes, to illuminate in a way that we can never revert back to,
yes,
such ignorance. And this Aradhana Mahotsav is a day of celebrating that moment where Bhagawan reveals Himself to be the presence beyond the veil.
Yes.
We see that every day in Prashanthi Nilayam, Aarti is given to Swami. And after Bhagawan receives Aarti, the curtains close. And all of us bow down and walk away. And even in that, Bhagawan has given a great lesson. If we actually see behind the curtain, Swami's Sannidhi is very much there. His presence is very much there. Kind of symbolic to convey to us the significance of Aradhana is while we go about our duties of our day-to-day life, we must discover Swami to be the presence beyond the veil.
Wow, I think that's very beautiful, brother. In fact, you know, as you said, He is that light in the twilight of confusion of our lives. And I think whoever has been touched with that light is never the same again. Once Bhagawan has entered your life, you are never the same again. And even though we miss Him now, we miss that form, we miss those interactions, we miss those conversations, we miss to see that glory and grandeur of Him in various festivals. But at the same time, when we look at what He has left with us, what He has still given us, it is still so much. There is so much that He has left for us to recreate everything that He gave us. And we thought it is really beautiful that on this occasion, we think about, we count our blessings, we think about everything that He has given us. And I think all these gifts that He has given us, all this would not have been possible if He had not taken the human form.
Absolutely.
And it is because of this beautiful human form that He took that we have these amazing memories and amazing gifts. And I think there are so many gifts. I mean, what are the gifts that come to your mind?
You know, I'm reminded of one very beautiful interaction that happened. This was, I think, in the year 2006, when there were a few students, a group of students who had the opportunity to go inside every day for cleaning purposes. And obviously, cleaning was the excuse,
yeah,
because what would follow was the divine interaction with Bhagwan. And they spent a golden 2 months, you know, everybody, all of us were outside, while only these 9 boys would go inside. And eventually it was time for the college to reopen, and it was, you know, June 1st was approaching, and everybody had this fear in their heart that, oh my God, now Swami is going to, you know, tell us to go and join the college.
Right.
And who wanted to join college anyway? So, you know, and finally, you know, it was the 30th of May, and Swami broke the news that, okay, now get pack your bags and go to Prashanthi. Okay. And everybody was like, heartbroken, right? What a golden 2 months everybody had spent in Swami's divine presence. And so everybody was crying. Those nine boys, they were crying and they said, Swami, you can't do this. We'll come with you. 1 month of college, nothing is going to happen. You know, like we're not going to miss much anyway. And while each one was kind of telling Swami, Swami, we don't want to go. Swami, please let us be with you. Swami said, see, at some point of time, this has to end, isn't it? There will be this separation, isn't it? So Swami, then how do we overcome the separation? Because it's just excruciating, the pain. And Swami said, this last 2 months you enjoyed so much, isn't it? Now, whenever in your life, whenever you feel low, go back into the treasure chests of your minds and your hearts and remember these 2 months, these golden moments that you have spent with Swami. And I think today that's exactly what we wanted to do, isn't it? Go back into the treasure chests of our heart and pick out those jewels. Those gifts, as you mentioned. And so what are those gifts which are absolutely common to the entire Sai world? In fact, the entire humanity. And we thought that we will share some of those gifts which are common. While we will have our own personal experiences, no doubt. But those are personal. They probably may only, enthuse us. They may motivate and incentivize us. But what are those common gifts that each and every Sai devotee has in the treasure chest of their heart? And those are four. So we are going to discuss four such gifts that Swami has given each and every one of us.
Yeah. And these are gifts that energize you forever.
Absolutely. That's the whole idea. That is to go back in. Yes. And so the very first gift is Nama and Rupa. You know, that combination, the divine, magical, mysterious combination of the name and the form.
Yes.
No, I'm reminded of, again, an episode which was narrated by one of our seniors. He had an entry which was pretty interesting to the college. You know, he came from a family that was devoted to Swami for many years. But his association with Swami started with him joining the college. It was the time of one of the summer courses. This boy came from a background where I think he studied in a boarding school associated with an Ivy League. And, so extremely luxurious upbringing. So he comes to Vrindavan, and the first shock, he realizes that he doesn't have a furnished room for himself. And he has to get his own mattress.
There are two things in that. One is a room for himself and a furnished room.
Furnished room, right. Wait, he was expecting a television to be in the room. So he thought he'll have a cot, he'll have a bed and all of that. And the first shock is they tell him that you have to get your own mattress. So he goes and procures a mattress. Then he goes to the room, and then he realizes that he has to get his own plate and glass. There's no cutlery. So somebody lends him a plate so that he can go and have his lunch. He goes to the dining hall. He has to sit down and eat. He's never sat down and eaten in all his life, right? So you're saying shock after shock. Then finally, evening when they are supposed to go for darshan, somebody comes and tells him, you have to shave off your mustache. He said, now when I look back, these appear to be such trivial things. But then they were so important for that boy of that age. And he said, I don't think I'm going to last here. So he was already making up his mind that probably the next day he will pack his things and leave, right? So he was just going through the entire day like this. And morning they went for darshan, Swami came, but still this confusion in his mind. Finally that day the summer course started. And in the evening, Swami invited all the students to come and sit in the Thrahi lawns. So he was seated there with all these problems in his mind. And at one point he said, why am I so agitated? It's such a pleasant environment. Let me just be calm and enjoy this. And as he was sitting there, we all have had the opportunity to be seated in that setting. Stillness, complete stillness, just the chirping of the birds. And then if silence can become more silent, that's when the hush when Swami is coming, right? So there is the hush. Everybody is looking at the Thrahi door, beautifully ornate Thrahi door. And as it opens slowly, Swami is standing there behind the door with his hands in front of him. You can imagine, that sight. Creaseless robe, beautiful smile on Swami's face, the breeze playing with Swami's hair. And he sits there and he says, I have never seen anything more beautiful than this.
Wow.
He said, I've never seen a sight which is more enchanting than this. And he said, for this, I am ready to undergo anything. He said, that moment, he said, for this one sight, for this one Lord, no amount of difficulties in life is unsurmountable are big. And, you know, later he says that he became a investment banker, and all through his career, he ensured that he would never go farther away than Bangalore or Hyderabad or Chennai, so that, you know, overnight when he wishes, he can come and see that beautiful
form. I think that's the magic of the form, isn't it?
Isn't it? Isn't it? So we all have been at one point looked at Swami, and sometimes I tell people, you know, Swami, you've taken away all the beauty to yourself. But I think that's the purpose.
Yes.
So that we can, those of us who are so easily pulled away to the world and the charms of the world, had to be pulled away from the charms of the world by this charming Lord.
Yes.
And in fact, one great thing about this Swami is that he has allowed himself to be captured, you know, in reels,
yes,
and his voice and everything of him, he's allowed himself to be captured.
Yes.
I'm sure it would be like what the Gopikas felt for Krishna and what the Vanaras and, you know, the devotees of Rama would have felt for Rama, right? That beauty. In fact, I'm reminded of another very senior devotee, Mrs. Ratanlal Amma, who spent many, many decades in Bhagwan's close proximity. She was telling that even before she came to Swami, her house used to be buzzing with the activities of, you know, of several great personages from the Himalayas, you know, great Siddha Purushas coming to her house and having food over there, and would just live over there. And they're one of the things that...
Almost for months together, her father...
Yeah, would
father
serve would, them,
yeah,
would have would the opportunity.
Them, yeah.
So, you know, when she first heard about the name of Satya Sai Baba, it was not very new to her, because her whole life, you know, from her young age, from her childhood, she had seen something like this.
Babas were not
Babas, new. Yeah. Right. Babas were not new to her.
Yeah.
So she had a mental image of what a Baba would look like, you know. So she thought that coming from the Himalayas means he will be having, like, you know, like a 56-inch chest and, you know, like a 6-footer, you know, solid body and kind of...
In Kasturisa's words, a reverent-looking beard.
Yes. Where, you know, the progress of your spiritual progress is directly proportional to the length of your beard. Right? Something like that. And so she was visualizing that, okay? And in walks, the first time she has the darshan,
yes,
is this tender little lad of roughly about 30, 35 years.
Yeah.
Okay, with a, you know, with the hair, with a crown of hair around. And she reveals, she says, yeah, that even while she saw Swami's form, she, there was an, you know, magnetic attraction in her heart. She felt like going and hugging this, you know, and
yes,
cuddling and fondling this tender little, and she couldn't believe that, is this a sannyasi? Because it was completely different. You know, that's the magical form, I think, of Bhagwan, isn't it?
Yeah, in fact, Swami's form is so beautiful that Bhagwan himself would remind us from time to time that he has taken this form for our sake, and we must not miss this opportunity to contemplate on his beautiful form. I remember in Bhajan Hall once, when we were all sitting and doing bhajans, Swami was on the beautiful throne out there, and Swami saw few students closing their eyes, and immediately he pointed out and said, "Hey, ask them to open their eyes. This opportunity they will not get again. I am sitting here so that you open your eyes wide and have the full darshan of the avatar." So, time and again, Swami has reminded us of this. In one such interaction with students, when students were, you know, praying to Swami for sadhana, you know, some way in which they can progress in their spiritual sojourn, Bhagavan aptly reminded the students, saying that this form that he has taken is verily for the sake of devotees. And it is a very simple form. In fact, if he would have come as Sri Rama or Sri Krishna or the Lord in all his paraphernalia, imagine
Vishnu, Shankar Chakra, Gada.
Shiva or with Shankar Chakra, Gada and all the paraphernalia, it's so difficult for an ordinary, simple human being.
Too many things to remember.
Too many details to visualize when you are especially meditating on his form. So Swami said that for this Kali Yuga, where, you know, there are lots of discounts, you know, otherwise we have to do 1008 Gayatri.
Yes.
Swami says at least do it 3 times while having a shower or while having,
yes,
food. So among those discounts, Swami, keeping in mind the situation and circumstances, brought a beautiful form. And in Swami's own words, he says that, see, it is so simple to contemplate on me. There is this crown of hair which is so unique, and you can sketch my form the way. In fact, Swami, in fact, taught the way that we must meditate on his beautiful form. And it goes something like this. Swami asked the students to close their eyes and in their mind's eye, sketch the entire form of Swami from the top to the toe, and then go back again from his divine lotus feet all the way up to his crown of hair. So to begin with, you sketch the beautiful curls of Swami. What beautiful curls they are. We hear about the curls of Lord Krishna in Bhagavatam. Many a times when we would see him up close, I would wonder, these are verily the curls of Lord Krishna that he has brought again so that we don't miss the chance to see him in that manner. So we sketch the curls of his hair, come to his broad forehead, the beautiful texture of his skin there, and his eyebrows. What unique eyebrows Swami has. And having sketched those beautiful eyebrows, Swami pointed out to a unique feature of this divine form. He said, now look at the point that connects his nose to the forehead. There is a line that separates the two. While describing this, Swami even said that this was specially created for the sake of devotees to meditate upon.
Wow.
So that beautiful line that separates his forehead from his nose, his amazing, beautiful eyes, penetrating eyes, when we contemplate on it and we remember him looking right through into our heart and filling us with his love and compassion and calmness. Oh, those eyes of Swami. And then you look at his cheek, that mole on his cheek, which is characteristic of Sai Baba, as Swami would say. And then his beautiful lips, his chin, and you come down to his wonderful throat of the Nilakanta himself. And then Bhagavan said, see, this is all you need to visualize with lot of attention. After that, it's very simple. There is just one robe that goes down straight from the shoulder of Bhagavan. You can come to his lotus feet, those soft, tender lotus feet of Swami that ever succor providing, ever refuge providing lotus feet of Bhagavan. As we contemplate and surrender at his feet, we move back again from his feet all the way, seeing all the features of his beautiful divine form to the crown of his hair. This form really, as in Swami's own words, he says, this is the concretization of the penance of devotees for thousands of years. That is the glorious form that we have the opportunity to behold. And that form verily is a gateway for us to the infinite glory of love itself.
Wow. Amazing, brother. Well, I think Bhagavan's form is one phenomenon where, you know, you can look at him for hours together and never get tired. You can keep gazing at him for from dawn till dusk, and still for one more glimpse, you long for that one more glimpse. And, you know, when I think about this form, this diminutive, delicate, delectable form, what comes to me is, you know, he chose a form which is most modern. He chose a form which is really in tune with the times.
Isn't it? I just wanted to, you know, kind of, sorry for interrupting, but he said the locks are like Krishna, so that's ancient.
Yes.
And now you're saying he's modern. So what a beautiful, yes, you know, combination.
Absolutely, absolutely. So this is a form which is most charming, most modern. At the same time, it is as ancient as it can be. It is an expression of the glorious ancient spiritual tradition of India. That is what is the form. And you see, if you're an African, you will say, oh, look at Swami sir, he's like me. He's among us. If it's an Asian, look at his color. I mean, he has so many hues. It's like how we all are. He's like among us. You think of an Indian, oh, he speaks Hindi, he speaks Telugu, he speaks Tamil, he speaks Malayalam. No, he's one among us. And a European comes and he says, my God, look at the way he walks. What grace, what gait, what style. A European feels, my God, he'll beat us in his sense of fashion. And an American comes and says, my God, look at his eyes. Look at his power. Look at his charisma.
Look at the way he captures you, mesmerizes you. So American feels, my God, this person is out of
the
world.
Everyone
connects to him. And I think that is one of the very, very most unique features of the Sri Satya Sai avatar. In fact, talking about Americans, I'm reminded of Alan Levy, you know, who came to Bhagwan way back in 1971. And somebody had given him a picture of Bhagwan. And in fact, looking at the picture of Bhagwan, he said, he looks like a rock star. In fact, he was reminded of Jimi Hendrix, you know, one of the musical sensations of the 20th century. And after that, his brother invites him to come to his place in New York City for a family function. And when Alan steps into that house, there is some music playing in that house. And the moment he listens to this music, Alan starts jumping in joy. He is like twirling in circles. He's asking the brother, what is this voice? My God, this is so heavenly. Who is this person? And the brother says, this is Sai Baba. This is Sai Baba. This is Sai Baba singing. He says, I have to go to India. I have to see. My God, who is this person? His voice just takes me away. And that is how Alan Levy's journey to Bhagwan began. And when you think about Bhagwan's voice, I think, see, it is not a male voice. It is not a female voice. You think about Bhagwan's hair. It is the hair, lovely hair of a woman. At the same time, it is the crown of a man. You think about his dress. It could be the graceful dress of a lady. At the same time, it is the most glorious dress of a holy man. So everything about him is in such a way that no matter which part of the earth you are, you will connect to him. No matter what gender you are, whether you're a child, whether you're a man, whether you're a woman, everyone connects to him. And I think...
And we have actually seen that happening, isn't it? Like, we've seen people from all over the world coming. Yeah.
And to me, I think that is one of the most unique features of the Sri Satya Sai avatar, the beautiful form.
I think just on this form alone, we can do an entire 1 hour, right? But even coming to the second part of the first jewel, which is his name, what a beautiful name. And I always used to wonder, you know, in the Sanatana Dharma tradition, it is said that we have 333 million gods we have. And I used to wonder, Swami, why didn't you just pick up one of those names? Like, those are established names. You wouldn't have had to do anything. You know, just take one name and all of us are named with some god or the other. But Bhagwan chose this beautiful word, Sai Baba.
Satya Sai Baba.
Satya Sai Baba. Now, what a simple name, what an all-encompassing name, Divine Mother and Father. Right? What a universal way of connecting. And of course, he himself went on to give us several, you know, full forms or inner meaning significances of that name, Sai Baba. Oh, and couple of them, we'll just probably, you know, spend in the next few minutes reflecting on that, because that's so unique to this avatar. Sai Baba, Swami says, is a confluence. The word Sai is a confluence of all the three paths. The three paths that have been glorified in Bhagavad Gita, the Karma Marga, the Bhakti Marga, and the Jnana Marga, comes together in this one name, Sai. Service, adoration, illumination, S-A-I. Service is karma, adoration is bhakti, and illumination is jnana. Wow, what a spectacular. And when we do this, what do we reach? We reach Baba. What is Baba? Being, awareness, bliss, atma. Sat, chit, anand, atma. Almost incredible, right? My hair stands right now just contemplating. We have heard this, but yet the more we contemplate. So that's one beautiful, you know, significance that Swami himself has given. The other is S-A-I, seek always inside, which we need to do more so now than ever before. Yes. On the Aradhana day, seek always inside, because he is the one who is seated inside. How incredible is that?
Right. The one I'm reminded of, and probably even little fond of, is when Swami says S-A-I stands for Sai first, all others next, and I last. I mean, it's a mantra for life. Wow. You know, it's the definition of dharma, right? It's the definition of dharma. It is the definition of the path that we all have to walk, that whatever decisions we make, whatever choices we make, give that preference to Swami. And then, is it useful to others?
Yes.
Paropakarathamidam shariram, Swami says. Then finally, think of your own self. And of course, one cannot forget the play of words. Swami would say IAS SAI, right? IA is the Indian Administrative Service. In fact, there was one devotee whom Swami had instructed that I want you to prepare for the IAS and become an officer. And then when he really did clear it and come back to Swami, Swami called him for an interview. And Swami said, for the world, you are IAS, but for you and for Swami, you are SAI. You are my representative in that job that you're going to do.
Wow.
Right? I mean, what a profound message just by the play of words. And the name is so simple. You know, it's a profound message inbuilt into the name.
Yes.
Doing Namasmarana, which is, you know, is the lesson for the Kali Yuga.
In fact, this SAI and IAS, Bhagawan puts it in a different way as well. He says, S stands for spiritual change, A stands for association change, and I stands for individual change. But while this SAI is this, the way that a sadhaka must go through their journey of life is the other way around. That is, start with I, which is individual change, transform yourself. Then you have transformed the society through the changes that you have made to yourself.
Through your example.
And also be in good company, Bhagawan says. And finally, this will lead to spiritual change, that is in the realization of the love that permeates in the entire creation. So, SAI and IAS. Speaking about sadhana, to one of our professors in Bhagwan's university, Swami also gave a full form of the word SSSB, which is usually Sri Satya Sai Baba. But Bhagwan said the first S stands for seva, which is what every devotee must first undertake. Then the second S stands for suffering. Now, seva doesn't mean that if I am doing seva, I must expect that life will not bring suffering. That is natural part of life, that it alternates pain and pleasure. So, suffering must be taken in our stride with the sense of surrender to the Lord, that He is giving me this test for me to progress. Swami would always say, test is my taste. And without test, you cannot graduate to your next class.
Yes.
Right, so suffering is the next very important element there. And then the third element is self-inquiry. So having done seva and having tolerated or undergone suffering with a sense of surrender to the Lord, the third, in a sense, it is also like the service, adoration and illumination. The third part is self-inquiry. That is, in all of this, you must inquire as to whom this suffering is happening, who is being served and who is serving really. So the self-inquiry will finally lead to B, which is Baba, and it is also bliss. So seva, suffering, self-inquiry, bliss.
Wow, beautiful.
So, and all of this name and form, you know, have kind of been put together in this one of the greatest gifts that,
yes,
you know, for most of us, for many of us, is the bhajans, the Sai bhajans, right? In which we can contemplate on the name and the form. And innumerable people have come into the Sai fold, into the Sai organizations through this gate, the first dwara, if we can call it, of the Sai world, which is the Sai bhajans. And the way the Sai bhajans has played, it has, there are innumerable instances. I'm just reminded of one very quick one, let me narrate, of a person who was going through tremendous amount of pain in his life, so much so that it had overpowered him and he wanted to end it. And this happened in London. And so he wanted to give up his life jumping into the River Thames. It's a freezing water. So he thought, you know, once and for all, let me finish this entire, this ordeal that he was going through. And he says that as he was about to jump, there is this voice, very strange voice. He's never heard this voice, which says, no, you will not. You know, and try as much as he may, he was not able to do that. So eventually he kind of lost the idea of jumping in. And so he said, you know, I'll come back tomorrow and I will try. And as he walked through the neighborhood, which was nearby, he heard, you know, needless to say, bhajans. And so he steps inside and he feels a sense of peace, which many of us feel. And at the end of the bhajan, a peculiar voice, a bhajan sung by a peculiar voice is played, that is none other than our Swami. And the moment that is played, he is able to, you know, kind of correlate the two, which was the very same voice that was telling him not to jump.
Wow.
Right? It was the same voice.
Same voice.
It was the same voice, that was Swami's voice. And of course, needless to say, that was the turning point of his life, you know, a transformation. Now, this man was a truck driver, okay? And he says that after years of service, he got the opportunity to take some relief material into the middle of Europe, the South Europe, where civil war was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And he was able to provide relief material to the warring parties. And it seems when the trucks would come in, the big convoy of relief material would come, both the warring parties would actually cease fire, okay, enjoy the relief material and then get back to fighting. So he was telling that, you know, his life was so unique from taking his own life to saving someone else's life. That was his journey. And he says it began with the voice and it began with the name and form of, you know, of Swami.
That one session of bhajans.
Yes, bhajans. So that's the magic of...
In fact, I'm reminded of... Brother Gautam Dutt, you know, he was a student here and later on also served as a faculty member for so many years. He was staying in Udhampur because his father was working in the army and Udhampur is in Jammu and Kashmir. And his mother was a very religious lady. She would go for any bhajans. And so someone told about Sai bhajans and the mother started going every Thursday for the bhajans. And someone gave... his mother, a photograph of Bhagwan, so she brought that and she would keep it next to her bed. And after some time, Vibhuti and Amrit started coming out of the photograph. But Gautam had nothing to do with it. He was absolutely, had no interest in that phenomenon, whatever was happening. They are two brothers, Gautam and Bharat. And they were in their own worlds. And but the mother would go and that's all about it. But then came the month of November when Akhanda Bhajans were being conducted in that center. And... now, the mother said that, you know, she wants everyone to come for the Akhanda Bhajan. Now, Gautam's brother was too small to disagree, even though he was not interested. And Gautam's father tried to give some reasons, but mother prevailed upon and he said, okay, I will come. And mother knew that, you know, Gautam is a hard nut to crack. He will not be so easily won over. So, in the night, mother goes to Gautam and she says, you know, can you do something for me, son? Says, what, mother? No, I want you to come for Akhanda Bhajan. And Gautam says, mother, I'm a young man. I mean, you're asking me to sit for bhajans? It's too boring for me. I really cannot do this, you know. And mother says, just once, for my sake. And he says, okay, mom, but on one condition. The car keys will be with me. So I go there. I sit there and... you know, when it comes to a point where I cannot take it anymore, I'll just get up and I'll come off. Mother says, okay. And Gautam goes and he sits for bhajans. And he says, the moment he sits for bhajans, the peace that descends on him was such a different kind of feeling that he had never experienced before. Because he was someone who was always listening to English music. He was doing horse riding, he was doing boxing, he was doing mountaineering, he had a very flamboyant lifestyle. So bhajans was like something very, very alien to him. But he had not experienced what he was experiencing here in everything that he had done before. And he had told, I'll probably stay for 15, 20 minutes. But he didn't realize that 15, 20 minutes rolled on. He thought, I will not open my mouth and sing. But unconsciously, he started singing. And he went on to stay till the end of the bhajan. For 2.5-3 hours, he sat there. And he heard the bhajans. And he says, oh my God, this much peace, extreme peace, I had never experienced before. And next Thursday, when it came, when his mother was getting ready to go, he's ready much before the mother. And he says, mother, can I come with you?
Mother, oh, needless to say, you know, he went on to become a student of Swami and a faculty member.
And in fact, the mother says, are you sure you want to miss your horse riding? He says, for bhajans, yes, I will miss my horse riding for bhajans. I mean, there are any number of such stories, you know, how the turning point in so many lives happened because of bhajans. In fact, I'm reminded of this beautiful letter that Bhagwan once wrote to the students, where Bhagwan says that this name of Sai, Swami says, if you have Sai's name on your lip, you are a Jivan Mukta. You are a liberated soul. If you just have the name
on your lips. And Bhagwan goes on to say, it's a beautiful letter written to the students of Vrindavan way back in 1981. Swami says, this name is the link between devotee and Sai. This name will bring you face to face with Sai, and this name will enable you to attain oneness with Sai. I think that is the power of the name, and it is because of these names that we have the Sai Bhajan movement, which I think is as glorious as Bhagwan himself.
Yes.
In fact, as is characteristic of Swami's bhajans, all the names are sung in Swami's bhajans, irrespective of, you know, one's faith. And that is really Swami's nature. So, in fact, we all know the famous poem which Swami revealed to Kasturi Garu, and through many of his discourses, where he would say, Sarva Rupa Dharam Shantam. All the forms in this entire creation are mine. I have adorned those forms. And yet, I am the silent substratum of everything. Sarva Nama Dharam Shivam. Every name that goes with the form. Swami would highlight this and say that, see, anything that has a form has a name naturally. So, every name that goes with a form is auspiciousness. Why? Because all forms are mine. Hence, all names are also mine. So, and then he went on to say, Sachitananda Rupam Advaitam. While I assume all the names and forms, I am only one and there is no second to me. So, this reminds me of an experience of my uncle, who used this name of Bhagwan to have the darshan of a beautiful form which was of his Ishtadeva, his Kuladeva, Lord Venkateshwara. So, it so happened that way back in the late 1950s, he was here in Prashanthinilayam. My grand aunt, who was one of the first people to bring our family to Swami, she in a very jovial way told him that, see, unless you get Kai Vibhuti of Swami, Kai Vibhuti means the Vibhuti that Swami would materialize and then give the devotee. Mm. So she said, unless you get Kai Vibhuti of Swami, don't consider yourself blessed. So she wanted that, she wanted to inspire that young man to do sadhana, you know, so she said that. And he took it very seriously. So what he would do is, he would stand in front of Prashanthinilayam after morning bhajans and all the way up to evening bhajans, because, you know, otherwise you have to maintain the discipline of sitting in the bhajans. So from one bhajan to the next darshan session, he would stand outside on the sands of Prashanthinilayam in the under the hot sun and do Namasmarana, Nitya Namasmarana. Wow. And he would say that Swami, who was then staying, Bhagwan was staying in Prashanthinilayam on the first floor. Yes. So Swami would go from his room to the dining area, which was right across. Yes. And while going, he wouldn't say anything. Sometimes Swami would look at him, smile and throw an apple or something like that. But he didn't eat anything. He kept all the prasadam with him because he wanted only the vibhuti,
Kai Vibhuti
from Swami. So he continued incessantly his namasmarana like this as a penance under the hot sun. I think after a few days, he was so dehydrated that he collapsed.
Oh my God.
He could not regain his consciousness. And people around there, you know, carried him and took him inside the Prashanti Mandir, the veranda in front of Swami's interview room, and they placed him there, and Swami came down having informed, and Swami came right up to this devotee and materialized Vibhuti and put it into his mouth. You know, that was the adamancy of that devotee. You know,
Swami, mission accomplished.
So mission accomplished. And Swami always says the devotee should be like that. Yes. Having asked what ought to be asked from the Lord, do not take a step back until you receive it from him. You know, Swami often says that.
Literally, Swami says you should tire yourself and fall down unconscious.
Yes, and I think he did that literally.
Literally.
And he got blessed by that. So there is no effort that Swami will overlook, you know, true, in love towards him. So Swami materialized the Vibhuti and gave him, of course, he regained consciousness. And Swami told him, ask him to take rest. And once he is fine, he can come to the interview room. And eventually, when he came to the interview room, Bhagwan has a special interview room. Those days, it used to be right next to Swami's interview room. There's a winding staircase.
Yes.
And Swami would call the devotee there for a personal interview. And Swami himself would stand on the first or the second step. And the devotee would stand down. But the distance between the Lord and the devotee was hardly anything, you know. And he called my uncle there, and Bhagwan just called out to him his name, Mr. Ganeshan is his name. He called out to him. He looked up, and what he saw was not the beautiful 5 feet, 3 inches form of our Bhagwan, but he saw the grand form of Lord Venkateshwara, decked in all his grandeur and jewelry. The sight was extraordinary, and he was not able to contain the vision of that form. And immediately Swami came back to his most soft and sweet form of Satya Sai and continued to address him. And then while describing this experience, he reveals that his Ishtadeva, before he met the avatar of Bhagwan, his Ishtadeva and Kuladeva was Lord Venkateshwara of Tirupati. And Bhagwan revealed to him through the medium of his name that he is Sarva Rupa Dharam, that is, all the forms of divinity and all beings is Bhagwan's own forms.
Wow. In fact, as you narrate your uncle's experience, I'm reminded of the story of my own father. For him also, Venkateshwara was everything. All the family ceremonies would happen in Tirupati until 1979, when father's classmate, who later on also became his colleague in the factory where they were working in Odisha, he gave one day a photograph of Bhagwan to father. And father, because he had a lot of respect for this friend, respect because this friend had suddenly transformed. During the college days, he came from a rich family and he would splurge his money in all unnecessary things. But after he joined work in that factory, suddenly something happened and he had become completely an introvert. And if he got any time, he would just be meditating. His house was only filled with pictures of saints and Swami. So for father, how did this transformation happen? If somebody called Sai Baba has transformed this man because he had seen him all through his college life, he has to be somebody special. So that's why, you know, he treated Sai Baba with little reverence and he kept Swami's photograph. And at that time, you know, in our township in Odisha, he used to hear about his vibhuti coming in photographs and all that. And then somebody said, we are organizing this trip to South India. Do you want to join? My father said, what are the places you are going to go? And they said, we'll go to all this Kanyakumari, Tirupati and all that. And after that, we'll go to Puttaparthi. Puttaparthi. So Puttaparthi means father said, okay, I will go. Because I want to check this out. Who this Sai Baba is? And that's how he landed in Puttaparthi. It was 1979, Vijayadashami. The day he stepped into Puttaparthi, it was the last day of Dasara. And you know, Purnachandra Hall was crowded. And somehow he managed to get some space to enter into the hall, but he was not able to see because, you know, he's very short. And so finally he thought the only way he can see anything is just stand. And the best thing is just go right to the end of the hall. So his back was against the wall. And from there he saw Bhagwan. And by the time he reached, it was the last Purnahuti of the Dasara Yagnam. And Swami came, you know, behind the fire, and Swami was pouring things into the fire, the final oblation. And as the ceremony concluded, he saw that Bhagwan raised both his hands, and in his characteristic manner, you know, Swami started blessing everyone. This double Abhayasta blessing. And when that happened, father was completely stunned, because in Swami's both palms, he was seeing Rama, Krishna, Shiva, Narasimha, the whole 10 avatars were vivid. And that is when he thought, is it a hallucination? What is happening to me? He asked the person next to him, what are you seeing? He said, nothing. I'm just seeing two hands of Baba. And that's when it struck to father in whose presence I am. And he was waiting to come back. And when he met my mother, he said, my life's purpose is done. We are not going to go anywhere else from today. This is the destination. I have got what I wanted in life. So,
I mean, if you consider Swami as an avatar, Swami proved that the avatars are in my hands. Right? Probably the source of all avatars.
That's the beautiful thing, you know. We are sitting here and we are talking of this name and this form as being so special. But then he is you know, Sarvadevata Swarupaya Swami would say that all forms are His, all names are His. And just like the beautiful episodes that both of you narrated, I mean, there are some, any number of episodes which have become a part of, you know, the Sai devotees' folklore. We've heard Swami Amritananda had the darshan of Ganesha. We had Venkatagiri Raja, and even Mother Ishwarama, who had the darshan of Lord Rama. Seshagiri Rao, one of the first priests of the old mandir, had the darshan of Lord Shiva. But these are deities. But then Swami appears in the form of humans too, right? The story of the army officer in Bhopal, if I'm not wrong. Swami appears to him in the form of a, you know, a friend, friend's wife, child, and a porter, right? And the other day I was listening to this beautiful episode. We all know Mr. Tyagarajan, late Mr. Tyagarajan, who used to work in Swami's press here. It was a time when he had not yet come and settled in Parthi. It was during the initial years of the university, or just before the university was set up. So he was helping Professor Gokak type out all the bylaws of the university. So he was living in the city in Bangalore. So he used to come all the way to Vrindavan and assist in this work. And those are the days when, you know, you, if you miss a bus, you missed a bus. You have to wait for a few hours. And he had to take a bus and a train and all that and reach. So if he misses that timing, then he would be in a lot of trouble. And to add to that, the samiti that he was going to, he was the chairman of the samiti or the convener of the samiti, and they would not start bhajans unless he comes. So it was around 6:30 that the bhajans would start, and one day he was very late. I think about 6:15 or 6:20, he comes out of Vrindavan, and he has missed the bus, and I think he's managed to go to Marathahalli or something, and he's got stuck there. And he's wondering, Swami, these people will not start bhajans, and what am I, I mean, I'm inconveniencing all these people. And all of a sudden, an auto drives by, and the auto driver speaks in Hindi, "Where do you want to go?" So he says, "I want to go to this particular temple or somewhere, wherever the bhajans used to happen." He says, "Come." The conversation was so crisp and curt, and he did not even have a chance to, I think, have a conversation or negotiate. So he got into the auto, then he started driving, and brought him to that place, and it was impossible to reach that destination in 10 minutes, but this man had managed to do it and drops him there. And he asks, "How much did it? How much do I owe you?" And that man looks at him and says, no, I don't take from you." In Hindi, all this conversation. He said, "Why wouldn't you take from me?" And he said, no, I won't take from you. He says, "Okay, what is your name?" He said, "Baba." So from the conversation, he could make out as a Muslim gentleman. So he said, "Baba is a very common name." So he doesn't think much of it. So he goes back, he goes into the samiti, and they're very happy that he has come on time. The bhajans go on. The next morning, he comes to Vrindavan, and Swami comes to him and asks, "Am I driving the auto well? Am I a good driver?" So any number of forms, and I think these are experiences any number of devotees have documented who experience in everyday life.
Even today. They continue to experience.
And I think the number of times when Swami has come to us in a different form and we have not recognized him is, I mean, that is also innumerable.
I think, as Bhagwan mentions in one discourse, that for every instance of Prahlada or Dhruva that you talk about, that you know, there are millions that you have not aware of.
Right.
We don't know only.
So I think that is the beauty, that this is a Lord, he's not limited by form. He's not limited by name, because we have so many experiences where devotees who did not know Swami, who did not know Swami's name, called out and he reached out to them. So he's not limited by a name and form. But such a Lord chose this form, chose this name. It can only mean that there's something so beautiful and special and unique about it. And that alone is a reason enough to look at it as one of the greatest gifts that Swami has given us, the name and the form.
Absolutely.
And talking about that, you know, we can, as we said, we can sit here the whole evening and talk about just Swami's name and form. But there's a very beautiful padyam, a shloka, where Swami himself described the form, right? And when you listen to it, you will feel that maybe Swami went into the mind of a devotee and described this form. So, dear listeners, we would like you to listen to this song, this padyam. Unfortunately, it is there in Swami's voice, but the quality of that is not very good.
So this is from the 1974.
This is a 1974 Samukos discourse. Towards the end of the Samukos, I think this was the last discourse, my Swami said, "I generally don't talk much about myself, but because many of you don't know, I thought I will talk about myself." And Swami very beautifully describes his form in this Padyam, and which we would invite all of you to listen and enjoy.
Buchi tandanchu to chedi ritiga kuduru gappina butta bolu juttu kulamata chihnalu kalaka guppanu deerpu tilakamemiyuleni తిలకమోము కనిపించి కనిపించకయు పాదములు దాచు బహువన్నెల పట్టు నిలువుటంగి నైజ శృంగారంపు ఆటపాటలు జూపు శివశక్తియే ఈతడని ఎరుంగు జుట్టు బొట్టు కట్టు పుట్టు కలన్నిట గట్టి నిక్కము నచి పట్టుదొంచు చిట్టి సత్యసాయి చిన్మయమన్నట్టు చిట్టి సత్య సాయి చిన్మయమన్నట్టు ఇతని గుట్టెరుంగ ఎవరితరము చిట్టి సత్య సాయి చిన్మయమన్నట్టు ఇతని గుట్టెరుంగ ఎవరితరము
What a beautiful Padyam, and what a beautiful way of describing Swami. Yes. I mean, I don't think any of us could have done justice to that. And literally every scene which we've been blessed to witness comes in front of our eyes, even as you listen to that. Reminded of a very beautiful episode narrated by Dr. Hislop. And I think it's very relevant, even as we are talking about the glory of the name and the form. It's his first interaction with Swami. Cut a long story short. He's a person who has done immense sadhana. He's an intellectual. And his approach to spirituality was very intellectual. In fact, he describes himself as a person with a dry Western heart, right? There's nothing for emotion, no place for emotions and feelings. And if you had to tell him anything spiritual, it had to be intellectually reasoned out to him. And a long journey brings him to Swami. And when he comes to Prashantinilayam at a time when he says there were 8 or 9 overseas devotees and 30 Indian devotees.
Wow.
That's all were there. And they were given accommodation. And one day they were told that Swami will come and speak to all of you. And a shed was given where they were all seated. And then Swami comes. And the same experience that we've been talking about, he was mesmerized with this form. He said, is he walking? And his eyes and his smile and everything. He said it was a sight that he had never seen before, that he started losing consciousness of what was happening around. And he went into a very deep state of stillness, and being a sadhaka, being a meditator, he knew that it was not ordinary. It was a very deep state of stillness he was going into. And he was turning within. He had lost consciousness of what Swami was doing around. And in that stillness and in that silence, he said there was a movement. And he describes that movement as the wind from the fluttering of a butterfly's wings. As gentle and subtle as that. And he was wondering, what is this movement? What is this thing I'm feeling inside? And he realizes it is love. And he says, I've never felt love like this before. Because it's a dry Western heart, in his own words.
The spring of love.
Right. And he said, I was feeling this love. And he said, what is this love? What is this sensation? And when he was looking deeper, he realized it was Swami. He said, it is Swami. And he just came out of that, and Swami was walking around. And then later he again meditated and he started asking, who is this Swami? And the answer that he got from his self is, who can enter the heart of a stranger uninvited and enthrone himself there? It must be the Supreme Lord, right? And he says after that, there was no going back. There was no doubt. There was no questioning who is this Swami. The reason why I'm saying that this is a very beautiful episode and very profound episode is today we are all sitting and talking about Swami and Swami's name and form because we feel that love inside the heart, because he has enthroned himself inside the heart. Otherwise, it's another name and form. For billions of people in the world, it's another name and form. So if we really want to make best use of this name and form, we should cherish and foster that love that we feel for this name and form inside our heart, isn't it?
Very true. Absolutely. In fact, Swami often says that my permanent address is the heart of the devotee. Vaikuntha and Kailasha and various other addresses that we attribute are branch offices, but the real address is the heart of the devotee. And there might be many devotees today listening to all these stories who may feel that they may not have had the privilege of seeing Swami in the physical form. But here is an experience which was a divine leela of Swami to help us understand how we must experience him even today. This happened to a student who was here in Prashanti, and bhajans were going on, and Swami had for a short while taken his vehicle and gone out somewhere during the bhajans. And this student, as he was singing bhajans, and because Swami's physical form was not around, he closed his eyes and he visualized Swami's form as if, you know, Swami was amidst the trees in the garden, and how Swami would sway his body, you know, and you would see those beautiful coconut trees in Prashantinilayam also swaying to the breeze. And he was visualizing Swami in this manner within himself, and suddenly he sensed a change of environment around him. His eyes are closed still, and somebody just tapped him from behind, and when he slowly opened his eyes, he saw Swami standing right in front of him physically, swaying in the same way that you know, he visualized Swami's you know, presence in him. And Swami just gently bent down and told him, "Outside Swami, inside Swami, same sir." So the Swami that we visualize in our heart, in our mind, is the same Swami, because actually there is nothing other than him. So moment we contemplate on him in our heart, in our mind, the real presence that he is very apparent to the devotee. So anybody, even during these times, can experience Swami through the glory of his Namarupa.
Wow. In fact, I'm reminded of how in Kodaikanal, once there were students with Bhagwan, and they saw how one person was struggling to get one moment with Swami. And Swami later told the students that one moment that this devotee is seeking, you have got 1,000 such moments. But that one moment for that devotee is 1,000 times more powerful than all these 1,000 moments that you have got. Because he takes that one moment and he thinks of it in 1,000 times intensity. And Swami says, any person, whatever one, two moments that you have got with Bhagwan, and all of us have got that moment, whether with the physical form or experiencing the inner Swami, we all have got that moment with Swami. If we can take that moment and if we can think of it with that much intensity, Swami says, if you think of that moment with 1,000 times intensity, I will ensure that that moment is recreated for you. I will recreate that moment for you. How he will do it, he has a million ways to do it, but he will do it. And he has done it, and he continues to do it for all of us. And I think these are days, the Aradhana days, are moments when we have to go back and think about those precious jewels in the treasure chest of our heart that Bhagwan has given, and relook at them, meditate on them, and pray with that much intensity that those moments get recreated for us.
In fact, when you were talking about that incident of outside Swami and inside Swami, possibly one of the objectives of the avatar to come in a human form is to introduce us to the Swami within us. Because we have forgotten the Swami within us, He has to come outside and reintroduce us to the Swami who is seated in our hearts. And one thing that sums up, you know, we wanted to cover three jewels in this episode, and we could just do justice, and we have not even done full justice to this one. No, that is the grandeur of the avatar. Mm. That is the grandeur of the presence that was there amidst us. You know, the one on this one note, maybe we can end that. It's not over. The story continues.
Yes.
Because if you look at this one beautiful character in the Ramayana of Mother Shabari, this was a lady who was told, this was a little girl who was told by her guru that Rama will come and you shall have the darshan of Rama. And what follows is decades of that kind of consistency and intensity every single day when she would, you know, clean up the path, when she would smoothen the rocks, when she would taste the fruits, hoping that that is the day when Lord Rama will come. And days and weeks and months and years passed by, and the rest of the world told her, oh lady, you're stupid. Why will the Prince of Ayodhya come here down south? And she just held on to that feeling that, yes, my God is going to come because my guru told that he would come. And yes, he did come. And you know what happened after he came? It was not that she had, you know, a happy life led ever after. No, it was just that moment where she could feed the Lord, clean his feet, and that's it. You know, her sojourn on this earth was over. We have that power to recreate. We have that name and the form that can recreate and bring Bhagwan back into our lives and to experience the joy of being in His presence. Dear brothers and sisters, let us take this opportunity of Aradhana to delve deeper into the treasure chests of our hearts and hold on to that name and the form to recreate that divine presence in our lives.
So dear viewers, brothers and sisters, we just took this one jewel, name and form, and there are so many more jewels which in a manner of sorts are the legacy of the Sri Satya Sai avatar. And we'll pray to Swami that we get more opportunities to continue this satsang. There are any number of jewels when you think about your relationship with Bhagwan. There are a few more that we have also thought about. And we will pray that in the future sessions, Bhagwan gives us the opportunity to share those beautiful moments of satsang with all of you. As always, thank you so much for your time, for your love, for your patient listening, and we express our deep sense of gratitude to each one of you as well as to everyone in Prashanthi Nilayam in the Media Center for enabling us to offer this satsang at His Lotus Feet. Sai Ram.